You're listening to a podcast appearing on the Two Guys Talking Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Green Gab Podcast, a place to gab with people rocking it in green. Green homes, green living, green companies. Join Marla Esser-Close, green home coach and author of Living Green Effortlessly, Simple Choices to a Better Home, and Tony Pratt, the director of builder relations at The Sound Room. Here are your hosts, Marla and Tony.
Hey, it's the Green Gab Podcast, and I am Marla Esser-Close, the green home coach, in the studio today with
Tony Pratt from The Sound Room.
Our guest today is someone I know through a very interesting kind of connection. This is Erica Boeing. How are you today, Erica?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Happy to be here.
Hey, we're excited to have you. And the funny thing is you and I have talked a number of times, but this is the first time we've met face to face.
Yeah, that's awesome.
The wonders of modern technology, right?
Happens more and more than we think.
Getting easier and easier. I've done several remote projects these days.
I know, you can. I'm podcasting from home now on the days that Tony and I don't podcast together, and just hook it all up on the computer and away you go.
Well, you know, and part of what we talk about in my project management program is the virtual teams.
Yep.
All these global companies now, you have virtual teams where you're never even in the same location anymore.
Yep. Seeing it more and more. So, okay, here's my fun fact for the day. I'm quite a bit older than everybody else in this room. When I graduated from college at Washington University, and I'm going to have to admit my age, this was 1984, because it won't make sense unless you know that, I wrote one of my two senior papers on telecommuting.
Oh, wow.
In 1984, got into this big philosophical discussion with a woman that was writing her doctoral thesis on telecommuting, and she thought it would never happen, and I thought it was. Fast forward to 1993, and my then boss, I was at IBM at the time, wanted me to come back to work. And I may not report the story exactly right, so anybody in IBM world, don't hold me to it. But I was offered an opportunity to telecommute and work from home since I was on the national team and needed to travel. So I started telecommuting in 1993.
Wow.
And I was like, that's really weird. I wrote my senior paper on that.
What I find funny is the person that was writing a doctorate saying this would never happen. It's almost like I'm going to stop technology in its tracks. Never.
Management control was her big thing, that management wouldn't let go of the control. I actually found that paper the other day. At any rate.
It's amazing how paradigms change.
Yeah.
So save that stuff. You might get to look back on it.
That's amazing.
You never know. You never know. So you are doing some super cool stuff, literally as the wind blows. I had to do it.
But no wind power here.
Tell us about, hot air from your, sorry. I should let Erica talk. But tell us about what you're doing with your company, and then we'll circle back around to how we met, because it was because of your company.
Yep.
But tell us a little bit more about it.
Sure. So I'm CEO and co-founder at Accelerate Wind, and Accelerate Wind's mission is to make small wind, in particular rooftop wind, economically viable. So
nice.
Today, wind turbines on rooftops are just way too expensive, and we have a number of inventions that we're working on to completely change that and make it much more normal.
You know, I was working for a non-for-profit a few years ago, and they were trying to do these houses up in North County, like, 2,000 square foot homes, and make them really energy producers, mm-hmm. not just what they could handle themselves. But we were really developing almost a distributed energy network in the community.
Yeah.
That's what we were planning. And we thought we had found a microturbine that would work. It was out of Germany. It looked pretty cool. It was, the right size. But I think that either false advertising or they went under and they couldn't make it work. But you are right. If you could make wind economical, oh my God, there's a market for it.
Yeah.
We were covering the house with every bit of solar we could find. We were putting in, any kind of hydro we could.
Wow.
We couldn't make the wind part work because it was not affordable at all.
Yeah, it's a completely untapped resource, and it shouldn't be.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Because you think a lot of houses have the space for something small.
Mm-hmm. Well, on commercial buildings as well, and they've got a lot more space.
Forget about commercial. I'm just talking about residential. Yeah. Absolutely, well, with commercial.
And the majority of houses and commercial buildings can't produce all of their energy with just solar.
Right.
And so really having something else that can be a local source helps people think about their energy more holistically in their home and get there. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, and I'd always heard that sunshine during the day, but a lot of times wind comes up at night.
Right, right. So definitely complementary. Yeah.
Yeah, where I live in Oklahoma City, we have lots of wind. Lots of big wind farms there, too, but utility-grade wind.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of commercial buildings, which is actually where we're primarily focusing on right now, they have peak demand charges. It depends on the state that you're in, but they get charged more for electricity, and a lot of times that peak demand is actually at night. And so solar can't offset that.
Peak demand at night?
Because everybody pulls at night.
Everybody pulls at night. A lot of these buildings are factories, the ones with the highest demand that really get hit by these charges.
Yeah, they push during the day, and they pull at night.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
I could see that.
Okay. Yep. And so they're installing batteries, expensive batteries, to offset their peak demand charges, whereas wind could.
Well, the only way we can really make solar work right by itself is if you have 7 to 10 days worth of storage in a house.
Right, right.
And that technology is just not there yet. It's coming
with
Tesla's Powerwall and all that, but it's just not there yet.
It's still pretty expensive.
Right.
It uses some complex materials that have bad mining processes.
Right, and especially with the industrial side, the industrial is still the big energy hog in our country.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can find something to balance out, the day we kind of have figured out, but we have nothing at night.
Yep.
So that's awesome.
The other great thing about small wind is the materials used to produce it are far less complex than utility scale wind or than solar. So the overall environmental impact is a lot less just from the materials embedded in the technology.
So what got you going in this?
So I've always been an inventor and engineer focused on energy and sustainability. I worked on energy, water, and waste technologies for a number of years, developing new inventions, working on waste to energy, water transport, and a lot of energy efficiency technologies. And I went to the Netherlands, actually, to study on a Fulbright scholarship. And I did my master's in society science and technology, which is really studying, like, how does technology affect society and how does society determine what technologies get accepted? I really wanted to understand the bigger picture around the technology that I was developing. And I ended up studying a concept called the energy rebound effect. I can go into more of that later if you're interested. What it taught me is that we really need to focus on the source of our energy in order to make sure that we're looking at the big picture, because a lot of times energy efficiency technologies are developed and they spur new innovations, which cause more energy use. So I wanted to focus on the renewable side.
Okay, so let me make sure I understand this right, because so this kind of applies, if I'm going to oversimplify here.
Go for it.
So as reduce, reuse, recycle works in the stuff world, first thing you want to do is reduce. Second thing is reuse. Last thing is last resort is recycle it.
Mm-hmm.
In the energy world, reduce may also mean where it comes from, what kind of energy it is. And then, of course, reuse, recycle, or use it more effectively. So what I hear you saying is we need to think back to ground zero, back to where energy is coming from, not just how efficiently we're using the end product.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. We need to think about the big picture. And so if efficiency helps you use less energy, which makes renewables more affordable, that's great. But the goal of getting to 100% renewables is really the end goal.
It also sounds like just because there's a mental block with people thinking, oh, well, I just put in all these energy efficiency products.
Right.
So now they're not as conscious
as
their usage habits.
Yeah, that's what the rebound effect really is so you install LED light bulbs.
But
and
now
you say,
you're
oh,
using
great.
Twice as much electricity because you're leaving things on twice as long.
Or I can light my pool outside or I can...
More stuff.
Right. So individuals can counter that consciously as far as companies developing technologies, starting with renewables, made a lot of sense to me.
I like that, the rebound
effect. That ties
effect.
Into automation because now you automate it all, so you're not thinking about it.
Right.
So because you're not thinking about it, it's automatically turning on and off when it needs to, not when, oh, I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, exactly.
And now you get the double whammy of the energy efficiency plus a cut in usage.
Yep.
Or a decrease in usage.
Wow. So that's kind of a heady thing to think about.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot.
but it's very, but that's practical. That's very common sense. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I spent kind of a whole semester diving into that concept of rebound to try to understand.
Now I know why we hit it off so much, though, because my degree is in engineering and public policy.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
Which is kind of that. I would love this society and technology. Oh, my gosh. It was like so up my alley.
Yeah, it was awesome.
When you were over in the Netherlands, did you get to look at the hydro over there?
Not too much.
It's amazing what they do with hydro.
Yeah, I know a few people did trips to like dams over there. Mm-hmm. There are several Fulbright scholars studying water management specifically over there because they're so good at it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know that we've ever had a Fulbright scholar on.
No, I don't think we have.
I think you're first.
Yeah, nice.
Congratulations, by the way. That is quite an achievement.
That was an amazing experience.
Only took us, what, 83 episodes to get one on?
Oh! Hey, we made it before 100. Exactly.
Ding.
Okay, on that note, let's just take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Check out the book, Living Green Effortlessly, Simple Choices for a Better Home, to make simple changes to buying habits that affect a home both inside and out. Marla Esser-Close shows consumers ways to make any home a green home. Get the book now at livinggreenbook.com. That's livinggreenbook.com.
Wouldn't it be cool if your advertising could last forever? It can with perpetual advertising. Here's how it works. Unlike TV or radio ads, where every instance the ads are broadcast, they're only played once and lost forever. Perpetual advertising can have repeat exposure and replayability weeks, months, and even years after they're inserted in a podcast. So even if a podcast is a few years old, your ads will still be impactful to repeat listeners, as well as new listeners. This gives your advertising dollar the most bang for the buck. Find out more about perpetual advertising at twoguystalking.com/sponsors.
Hi, I'm David Knoll from Walter Knoll Florist. You're listening to The Green Gab.
We are gabbing today with Erica Bowing of Accelerate Wind. And hi, Tony, you're still here.
I'm still here. I haven't ran out yet.
I haven't given you a hard time in a while.
Well, I know that's because you're in another city now. You don't see me as much.
I know.
Well, let's face it, it's not like I have a boring schedule.
You do not have a boring schedule. And I actually have been trying to get a hold of Erica. So I promised in the first segment that I would tell people how we know each other.
Oh, yeah, that's a great story.
My best friend from engineering school at Washington University is Marlene. And Marlene lives in Fremont, California.
Okay.
And her husband, Jim, works a lot with clean tech and advises groups. And he called me one day and he said, hey, I've got this young lady I'm working with in the Clean Tech Open, I think it was.
Yep, the Clean Tech Open.
And he said, she's actually in St. Louis. Would you like to chat with her? And I'm like, oh, yeah, duh. So we three-wayed, didn't we? Three-way called?
I don't remember. I think possibly, yeah.
Any rate, that was like, what, a year ago? You know, we keep talking about getting together, and I saw her the other day in one of the U.S. Green Building Council newsletters. And I was like, Erica, I'm coming to town. I want to get together. And I'm like, wait, you want to come on the podcast? So, Jim, thank you for introducing us.
Yeah, for sure.
We're finally here in person.
Some of the people you introduced me to here, I talk to, like,
good.
Right, super regularly, so.
Good. I'm really, I was in St. Louis a long, long time, and one of the things Tony and I both do this is we just love being able to introduce and connect people to each other. And that's really where it starts happening, you know?
Yeah, you can't do it without people, mm-mm. Like.
Well, the nice thing is the construction community in St. Louis is very tight-knit.
Mm-hmm.
It's horrible trying to break in, but once you've actually broke into it, then it's all connected.
Yeah, that's true. The USGBC has been great. It took me a little while there, too. But
and for those of you that aren't familiar with it, that's the U.S. Green Building Council. And we have an incredibly strong chapter here in the St. Louis metro area. They've done some phenomenal work.
Yeah, it's one of the older ones.
Yeah, it is one of the older ones. Yeah, unfortunately, the group in Oklahoma isn't quite there yet, but we're working on it.
It's our hidden gem. We've always been on the cutting edge of technology and construction, and people seem to not want to accept that.
Tony can brag on everything.
You know what? I just know. I know the people in the industry.
You are a great ambassador of St. Louis, and we're very glad that you are.
I wouldn't go that far.
And we're very glad to have you in St. Louis now.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed being here. I've been away to the Netherlands for like 2.5 years, and then I've been back for about a year and a half.
What other parts of the country have you lived in besides the Netherlands?
I grew up in Ohio.
That's not in the country, sorry, the world.
I grew up in Ohio. I went to engineering school at Olin College of Engineering in Boston.
Okay.
Studied abroad in Scotland, so that was a few months in Scotland.
Nice.
And then I guess in total I've been in St. Louis for 5.5 years.
Oh, you've been here a lot longer than I thought you had. Okay.
Yeah, my first job out of college was here from 2010, 2014.
Okay. Yeah. So what made you want to go out on your own?
It's something that I had always thought about doing, especially that I worked for several years, kind of got my confidence up in my engineering skills, studied the social side of how technology affects the world. So it seemed like the natural time to try something on my own. And I had a lot of ideas that seemed to be the best way to take them forward. We received an Arch grant in St. Louis that was right up as I was finishing my time in the Netherlands. Applied for that and we were successful. So that seemed like the natural time to come back and
got some funding. Might as well take a shot, right?
Basically.
Well, and the startup community in St. Louis
it's amazing.
It really is.
It's grown so much over the past 5 years. I went away in 2014, came back in 2016, and I was just shocked with how much everything had changed.
Oh, the incubators are really pushing everything along. I mean, think about how that's grown. Because when I was a freshman down at SLU, nobody would even have thought about that.
No. Yeah.
We're located at T-Rex. The community's there is just incredibly supportive.
You're a T-Rex?
Know. Yeah.
That's a client of ours.
Oh, really?
T-Rex is a client of ours. We did a lot of audio.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I used to know a lot of people down there, but I don't know if I do anymore.
Yeah.
That's good. That means people are growing up and new folks coming in.
Constantly rotating.
So what's your big, hairy, audacious goal with Accelerate Wind?
Our big goal is to have wind turbines on as many commercial building roofs as possible, for starters. And then eventually we want to translate a lot of our inventions to other small wind technologies, whether that's for homes that are installing wind turbines out in fields or other like remote location wind energy technologies. I think we see a lot of applications for our technology elsewhere.
Very cool. So are people trying it yet, or is it still in the development phase?
It's still in prototyping.
Super secret.
prototyping and development phase.
Okay.
We developed some new drivetrain technologies to reduce the cost of the power electronics, and that's probably the most unique thing that we're doing. So we've been heavily prototyping and testing that now to prove out that it's going to work.
Now, for small turbine, because when most people think wind farms and all that, they think, 50 feet in the air on the pole.
Right. Yep.
Explain to people the difference between small turbine versus that traditional farm.
Well, I'll tell you what we're doing, because it's even a little bit different than what you normally see on a building rooftop. What we're doing is we figured out that wind speeds at the edge of the roof are typically 1.5 to 2 times faster than other parts of the roof.
Okay, I can see that.
You have high pressure on the vertical face, low pressure on the horizontal face, and so like an airplane wing, it causes the wind to speed up as it goes over the edge. So we have a channel that we have designed that captures that faster wind speed, guides it towards a central wind turbine. Takes some of the turbulence out of the wind at the same time, because that's one of the problems that rooftop have often had with wind, and lets us get more power out of the same wind area.
Okay.
The channel's designed to be architecturally integrated into the building. So as you look at it, more see this angled channel than you see actually a rotating mechanism that's kind of in the back.
So that addresses a lot of the aesthetic concerns.
Yep. Yep. Trying to deal with turbulence, aesthetics, and cost all at the same time.
Awesome.
Yeah.
We love new ideas.
And in reality with, commercial buildings, all that stuff is usually up on the roof somewhere.
Right.
Whether it's HVAC, solar, you name it, they put it up on the roof. That way nobody can, the cost of keeping it in the office itself, well, they have a better use for that space.
Mm-hmm.
So just throw it up there so I don't have to look at it.
Yep. The other thing, so we're focused on the edge of the roof. A lot of times people don't put anything on the edge of the roof because it's too windy.
Right.
So it's this naturally open space that works perfect for us.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah.
There you go. Back to reuse.
Reusing
another part of the building. See?
But it's a better use of resources as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. And I love the fact that we have so many minds working on so much of this. And I think that's just a huge source of hope that we have so many people working on solutions. And yes, we have our fair share of problems, but we have a lot of people working on a lot of really cool solutions.
Well, and the nice thing is, as technology gets, more advanced, when you think about building a building 50 years ago, you might have had a couple architects telling the contractor this is how you build it. Now, how many specialists are involved in designing a building?
Yeah, a lot.
think about it, right?
A lot.
Because whether it's LEED certified or not, there's just so much now that goes into that building.
Yep.
And architects and contractors all understand this. The general contractor now brings the team together. Everything is going that team-based approach.
Yeah.
So you'll have your alternative energy experts. You'll have your construction experts. You'll have your design experts. You'll have your interior designers, your architects, whatever. And it's all together while you have that team leader there saying, you do this, you do this, you do this.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have a seat at the table and it's more accepted that, yes, I'm doing something different.
Yeah.
Well, great, because we need something different.
Yeah, absolutely.
Would this design, would it have to be designed in to the building like when it's originally planned,
no,
or can it be retrofitted?
It's completely designed for retrofit. It hangs over the parapet, okay, of the building, okay, which all commercial buildings have.
That's a really cool idea. And I'm sitting here, my mind's reeling like, yeah, who all would like love to know about this when it gets going?
So awesome. Yeah.
There's definitely, I think, going to be a lot of people that are going to be looking at this. And I think there's so much more openness now towards understanding that energy can come from multiple sources.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's becoming a lot more commonplace now.
Well, and once again, larger buildings like that use more energy. So
yes,
they're looking for any possibility that's out there that can bring down their costs. And they understand the paybacks.
Right.
They understand all
true
that now. Whereas 20 years ago, huh?
Yep.
Yeah.
Why am I paying this? And what's it going to do? And it's going to take me how long to pay? Now, that's all part of the, it's all baked into the equation.
Right. Your average retail building will only be able to produce 25 to 40% of its energy with solar. And those are buildings that are actively installing solar energy and looking for other solutions. And they
right
just aren't there yet. So that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah. We have 120 panels on our roof in our building.
Oh, cool.
But the nice thing for us is 7 o'clock on, we're shut down.
Right.
So we're not using as much.
Yeah.
But still,
that's really
it doesn't pay 100%.
Mm-hmm. No, but it's a good start.
Oh, yeah. It's not bad when you're an electronics retailer.
It's
yeah
a good start.
Don't miss the next episode of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. isn't just a television show now on ABC. It's a great new podcast available at agentsofshield.tv. Only on the Two Guys Talking Podcast Network.
You can try and learn about voiceover all by yourself, or you can get you and your voice to school. Check out Voice Farmers Voiceover Academy today and learn how you can make money with your voice. It's all available over at voicefarmers.com. That's voicefarmers.com.
I'm Chief Chris DiGiuseppe from WhatCopsWatch.com, and you're listening to the Green Gab Podcast with Marla Esserclose.
We're gabbing with Erica of Accelerate Wind, and oh my gosh, we're just really enjoying listening about all the new ideas that you're bringing to the table and prototyping and ways to help people have better ways to use energy and to get energy. I love the inventiveness, so kudos
thanks
to you for putting it out in the world, because that's what we got to do these days, is put it out there.
Yeah, thanks. I've been enjoying it a lot. It's been a fun process so far.
I bet. So I mentioned earlier that I reconnected with you most recently because I saw you on the U.S. Green Building Council mailer that you were speaking. I guess it was a week or two ago.
Yeah.
You were telling me a little bit more about the meeting and what y'all were talking about. And then I also want to make sure we get a minute to talk about the other topic.
Project Drawdown, the talk I gave for the U.S. Green Building Council, was all centered around Project Drawdown, which is something I was involved with between my time in the Netherlands and between starting Accelerate Wind. And it's an amazing organization that their focus is on mapping, modeling, and measuring and communicating the 100 most substantive solutions to reversing global warming. They just put out a book in April of 2017 called Drawdown. It's the best-selling environmental book of 2017.
Yeah.
Really ties into what you're talking about before, that there's a lot of hope out there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people working on a lot of different solutions. And they wanted to show whether or not it was possible to actually reverse global warming by combining technology solutions, land use solutions, where we're actually drawing carbon out of the atmosphere.
Okay.
And also more behavioral solutions. Educating women and girls is one of the solutions. They had a research team of 65 researchers all over the world, 6 different continents, 22 different countries. Over half of them had PhDs. All of them had at least one advanced degree. Super diverse team that was researching these 100 solutions to reversing global warming. So I got involved. I did the research on waste to energy and landfill methane capture. The 100 solutions are extremely diverse, and the modeling for the potential impact of these solutions was based on what people were already doing and what was plausible for us to get to by 2050.
Okay. By
2050.
Okay, so we have a few years.
Yeah, so the goal is to say, can we reverse global warming? Can we get to that point called drawdown, where we're actually pulling carbon out of the atmosphere on a year-to-year basis by 2050?
So kind of a pivotal year.
Yeah, the answer is yes, with lots of aggressive adoption of each of these solutions. But it was really something that is meant to give hope and show that there are a lot of things going on and a lot of different ways that we can get there.
And that's part of what we really advocate, is that everybody can do something. And if everybody does something, millions of people taking even a few actions is millions and millions of actions.
Yeah, each of these solutions, some of it government will lead the way, some of it businesses will lead the way, some of it will be individuals and communities. Okay. So there's really something for everybody in there to draw inspiration from.
And you're like the third person this week that said, I need to read this. So it's going on my list very quickly.
That's awesome. It's written intentionally to be digestible to people who aren't familiar with the particular technologies or solutions.
Okay. Cool.
So should be a good read.
So the biggest thing I'm hearing here is the same, just do something.
Yeah.
I think the longer we all sit around and just go, well, it's me, this problem is so big, I can't do anything about it. Then we're just...
Well, and
it's kind of part of the problem, not part of the solution at that point.
Right. And how many times do we talk about that where most people, they can't fathom the big picture. Mm-hmm. They don't see the big picture.
And they don't have to.
They don't need to. All they need to is worry about the little part of the puzzle that they can control.
Yep.
Or affect.
I joke about that all the time at work. Control what you can control.
Yep.
You can control your habits. You can control what you buy. You can control how much energy you use. If that's all you worry about, and then you get another 5 or 10 people to do the same thing, and they get 5 or 10 people to do the same thing, then you have a multiplying effect, and those steps go into the bigger picture.
Yep. The number 3 and the number 4 solution in the drawdown ranking, number 3 is plant-based diet, and number 4 is reducing food waste.
Sure.
Yep. That's something we each have control over every day.
Absolutely.
Choosing to eat less meat, choosing to use the food that you buy rather than buy too much and throw it away.
Beef is the most environmentally intensive, food you can you can digest.
What's it like, 50 times more intensive than
2,000
a lot of vegetables?
Gallons of water, a pound of beef.
So here's kind of what we want you to think about, folks, is that a lot of the things that help all of us in mass also help you individually. So for instance, we're not saying you don't have to ever eat beef again.
Right.
But if you cut down your beef to 1/5 of what you're eating now, or 1/4 of what you're eating now, that means you're cutting out 3/4 of the resources that are required to buy it and grow it and ship it and grow the feed to feed the cattle. And so that's an incredibly resource-intensive food source for the calorie. And there's actually, I've seen some studies or articles that will calculate like the energy and resources per calorie and then per nutrition. Mm-hmm. And you start looking at it that way. Yeah, a varied diet is a good thing for a reason, right? Yeah.
Well, and I've heard arguments, the food, the crops that are grown to feed animals are different from the crops that are grown to feed people. And they're like, well, it doesn't affect one way or the other.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly.
It still takes land. It still takes water.
Exactly.
It still takes fertilizer.
But you know what?
It still takes energy.
That's food that could be grown for people that are starving throughout the world versus to feed an animal that you're going to kill to eat.
And the amount of land that we could free up, too.
Right. Absolutely.
For other purposes.
There's a lot of different things that play into this. Once again, people have a problem seeing the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
So control the small picture that you can, and everything usually works out.
I'll have to go look up the TED Talk. I listen to the TED Radio Hour a lot, and there was the Big Five was the TED Radio Hour program I was listening to. And the Big Five things that we're going to have to figure out sustainability, but food waste was a big one. And I'll see if I can find the podcast and the TED Talk, and I'll link it in the resources, because it was right up this alley. And this young woman from, I believe, Ethiopia, but one of the African countries, but had done an intense amount of research and really arrived at a lot of the same conclusions that you're sharing from Project Drawdown.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, there's a lot of thought on this, you guys, and we don't want you to have to feel like you have to do everything, but do something. And changing your diet around a little bit is not only good for the masses and good for all of us, it's really good for you too, because you're going to get great health benefits. So
yeah, for sure. The 80 solutions, obviously, not every single person can walk, right. We'll work on 80 or all 100 solutions, but...
What was one of your favorite or one of the weirdest?
To tie it back to what I'm doing on the wind side, the number 76, which is actually the last one that they measured, because some of them integrated with the others, was micro wind.
There you go.
So it's...
It's going to be a big hit.
But it's literally, it's still a substantive solution to global warming, but because it's so expensive, it's ranked at that number 76. Right. So I think what we're trying to do...
As it becomes more affordable, it'll move up the scale.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're trying to do. The other one that was really interesting and one that isn't brought up a lot in the context of climate change was women and girls.
So one of my passions.
Yeah, educating women and girls was number 6, and family planning was number 7. If you combine them together, they become number 1, primarily because when you empower women and girls, they tend to have less children. And so they estimated that instead of having a population of 10.8 billion in 2050, we could have 9.7.
Actually, something I just read said we're about ready to hit the tipping point and plateau of population. And based on replenishment rates, we're starting to see it get ready to shrink. And that includes in China and India.
Wow.
And
that's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I just read it. I think it was this week.
Oh, that's interesting. Because Europe's been there for a while.
Yes. Right. The replacement rate for Europe has been slowly decreasing over time. But yeah, they said on a worldwide scale, when you include even China and India and Africa as a continent, that yes, we're starting to see this is going to be the plateau and it's going down from there.
That's interesting. Yeah, I haven't seen that.
Starting to happen.
I've seen the UN numbers for a while where we're predicting kind of that 2050, that plateau might be possible.
Oh, it's before that.
Wow.
Yeah,
cool.
I think they're saying 2030.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Okay, you're going to have to find that so we can put it in the notes.
Yeah, I'll just have to find it out of the book. It'll be, I got time.
He's got all kinds of things he's got to go find me.
That's what I get for continually getting different degrees.
Oh, darn. We feel so bad for you.
Yeah. You're not the one reading all the time.
Well, I am super excited to see where this goes, Erica.
Thanks. Yeah, me too.
So we'll make you a deal. Keep us in tune. Keep us in touch with what's going on. And about a year or so, come back and get us updated.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay. It's a date.
Excellent.
You be back?
Do I have a choice?
No.
Exactly.
Sam will be here too.
You don't have a choice either, Sam.
Well, hey, check out the Facebook Live for this podcast and check out the show notes on the Green Home Coach website or on greengabpodcast.com. And if you are listening to this podcast on any podcast app or Apple Podcast, aka it was called iTunes, please, please leave us a review. The more folks that leave reviews, the more it gets out to the world so that we can continue to share this message with as many folks as possible. And hey, if you know somebody great that we should be bringing on the show, give us a holler and let us know, because we'd love to talk with them. Or you. Love having great people to come gab it and gab it green. So, Erica, thank you so much for taking some time to share what you are doing with our audience and with us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Tony, thanks for being here always and rocking it out in green. And everybody, you have a great green day.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Green Gab Podcast and for joining us on our own personal green odyssey as we change the world one Green Gab podcast at a time. What did you learn about during this episode? Tell us now by visiting our website at greengabpodcast.com. And remember to connect with us via iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter. Links to do all of this are at our website, greengabpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, but more importantly, thanks for rocking it in green.